Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico. Welcome to another edition of my program. It's November 14th, 2013, and I've got a really, really special guest with me this evening, Mr. Scott Seiferlein, who I'm going to introduce you here officially in just a minute. But just a couple of reminders. Number one, don't forget, if you want to call into the program at any point through the live performance, which we're obviously live right now, you can call area code 646-716-4667. That number again is area code 646-716-4667. Or you can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com if you've got some questions or comments throughout the program. I'll certainly try to read those out. Also, if you're on Facebook, I would certainly appreciate it. Visit us on facebook.com/golftalkliveblog and throw a few likes, or if you want to post a few comments on there about the programs, either past or current programs, we'd love to hear from you. And I've been racking up my Twitter followers here in the last few weeks since I've been pushing it, so I'm going to push it again. My Twitter handle is Ted and Buck CEO. I'd love for you to connect with me on Twitter. Don't do a lot of tweets, but certainly keep everybody posted on what's happening here on Golf Talk Live. So we'd certainly love for you guys to follow me there. And lastly, for those of you that have been checking out the website, blog, it's www.golftalkliveblog.com. Especially go there this time of year as we get closer to Christmas. Everybody's looking for some great gifts to buy. Some of the guests, the previous guests, have had some books on there. I've very graciously have put the jacket of the book and a short cap of what the book is about, and obviously a direct link and where you can purchase it. So for those of you who want to get a book for that golfer in your family, you can do that at the golftalkliveblog.com website. As I said, my guest this evening, I've really had to kind of wait until the latter part of the season. He's just so busy to get him on the program, but I'm very, very excited. I've been following him for quite some time now. I see him all the time on some of the media sites like Facebook and so forth, always chiming in and giving some great advice and thoughts, and I wanted to have him on here this evening to share with my listeners. As I said, Scott Seiferlein is a PGA golf guru and also the owner of GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com. He's a four-time author of business golf and golf instruction books, and here's a list of the books that he's written so far. The Game of Golf and the Art of Business, 19 Holes of Business Golf Conversation. This is my favorite, Stop Slicing in Five Swings and Stop Slicing in Five Swings for Left-Handed Golfers. The link to purchase the book, I'll give it to you now, but we'll also talk throughout the program, and you can get that again. It's at www.grandrapidsgolflesson.com, and just click on books, and you can get a copy for yourself. He's also a noted golf instructor in the Donald Trump's book, Trump, The Best Golf Advice I Ever Received. So make sure that you have a pen and paper handy, and because he'll be giving you some information that you won't want to miss. Without any further hesitation, let me welcome my guest this evening, Mr. Scott Seiferlein. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Ted. It's great to be here. I really enjoy doing calls like this, so thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. And just to let the listeners know, I'm going to take it easy on Scott tonight. He's a little bit under the weather, being up north, and that cold weather has been coming in. So forgive Scott if he's a little bit sluggish tonight, but I know he's going to do a great job here. Scott, let's just start right off. First off, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself for those of you that that aren't familiar with Scott, might want to learn just a little bit about you, and then we'll get into some questions for you.
Sure. Thanks. I've been in the business ever since, for as long as I can remember now, and this is my 20th year working in the industry. I've been a PGA member now since 2000, so going on 13, 14 years as a PGA member, and teaching full-time since 2003. So really enjoy teaching the game, and relocated back to Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm from Michigan originally and relocated back to Grand Rapids in the winter of 2006 to start up my own company. And that's how GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com got started, and I leased space at a very prestigious private facility here in Grand Rapids, Watermark Properties. They own three private clubs, and I actually teach up full-time out of two of them. I don't use all three of them just from a logistics standpoint, but we're looking at expanding and doing some different things over the next few years. So we've got a great facility to teach out of, and that's kind of where I'm at with the golf instruction side of the business, and I'm sure we can get into more as we go tonight, but that's
sure.
kind of what I wanted to highlight here to open.
Well, not a problem, Scott. One of the reasons, just to let the listeners know, one of the reasons why I really wanted to have you on this program, as I said, I've been following you for some time now on obviously Facebook and some of the other social media sites. Scott is very active in, particularly on Facebook, in a lot of the different golf groups and that, and it's not just a matter of sort of following along in that. You actually participate a lot in the groups and throw up a lot of great advice on the business side of golf, and that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to have you on here. Obviously, I know you're an accomplished instructor. We certainly want to highlight that, but you also have a very keen business sense and have helped many, many people in the golf industry, many of your peers, on the business side to promote and market themselves. We're going to talk a little bit about that tonight and give the listeners so for those of you out there that are listening that are instructors, yourself, you definitely want to pay attention to Scott because he's got a lot of knowledge that he's accumulated over the years, and he's going to share some of that tonight. But let's start about just on the books first here, Scott. There are a lot of golf books on the market. We've seen, I mean, there's an unlimited amount, probably thousands. What makes yours different?
Well, I'll start with the flagship book that we are most proud of, my ghostwriter and I, my publisher and I as well. And we started that book in a conversation we were having. There's a lot of golf instruction books out there, as you said. That was what we were talking about. And what could make one golf instruction book stand out from another? And there's just so many out there. So we actually took a different route. We went with the route of business and golf and how they're related. And I have a lot of experience developing business on the golf course and experience developing my own business and how that relates to the actual game of golf. So the book is titled The Game of Golf and the Art of Business, and it actually highlights a very successful business person who I take around for a round of golf at the famous Bethpage Black Golf Course in Long Island that most people are familiar with it because it hosted two U.S. Opens. And I was familiar with it, having played out in Long Island and teaching out there for several years at a couple different locations, Middle Bay Country Club and Poxabog Golf Center. And I played a few state opens there at the Bethpage Black Golf Course. So I take this gentleman through 18 holes of golf at Bethpage Black, and through that we discover 18 different challenges that are related to both how he would succeed on the golf course with each individual hole, and then how that's related to the challenges that he overcame to be successful in business. So it's actually, we turned it into an entertaining story, and you'll find some business golf books out there, and there may be full of content, but this is actually an entertaining story. What's interesting about it is I've had a lot of people that don't play golf that have read it and reviewed it and said that they really enjoyed the book. So that was something that we were trying to accomplish with that, and we did. We did very well with that.
Well, and that's what's, you know, I think good about a book like this is you want to be able to not just, obviously you want it to be successful in the golf market, but you want it to be able to branch outside of the golf market as well. Because if you know, and this is where a lot of the books run into the problem, is they tend to focus too much on one area. And quite often they're shutting out a whole other segment of the population. And I mean, it's great that, you know, you're writing a golf book and you want to target golfers, but if you can throw something else in there that other people would find interesting as well, then you're now opening the doors not only for the book, but maybe some people that maybe hadn't considered playing golf might say, there's a little more into this. I might want to look into it further, and you might get some new students out of it as well.
Exactly, and that was one of the goals. And then also it was just a lot of quality business lessons within that book as well that the business community can relate to, especially those that are, you know, you've probably heard the stories all the time of how if a law firm sends out their new people coming into the law firm to go out and play some company golf, play in the company outing, and they haven't played golf or they're not as skilled at golf and they're intimidated and it doesn't go well. So there's some good tie-ins there as well.
Yeah, and That's so true. You know, there's a lot of business people out there. I mean, for years, for those of us that are in the golf business, have known that golf is a game that really has been used for years and years, not so much for just recreational and obviously at the highest levels, but it's also been a great tool for business types. And it is very intimidating for somebody that maybe isn't an accomplished golfer to sort of be thrust out into that arena, if you will. And that's where somebody like yourself comes in. You want to get connected with a PGA instructor and certainly take some lessons and get a good start from day one. But I like stories. I like books that do tell a story. And I haven't read it. I'll be honest, I haven't read it as of yet, but I'm going to make sure I do. So it has intrigued me, and I want to get going to get a copy of it and read it shortly. But where did you get your inspiration from?
Well, to tell you the truth, Ted, I've wanted to write a book for a long time, and then when I started my own business, it became even more important. Number one, from a business standpoint, a book gives you expert credibility. So it's opened up some doors for me just to speak. But back to my inspiration, I had written a lot of articles and material and had a lot of content written over the years, and I wanted to at some point put it into a book form, but I was not an expert at how to turn it into a story and how to create that content. So fortunately, I was introduced to a publisher who's a kind of a hybrid ghostwriter publisher. And he was able to take my concepts and really add the flair of the story to it. And it's just an outstanding job. It's based out of Holland, Michigan, and it's Black Lake Press is the company that did that for me. And they really did an outstanding job with this book. So I was super excited about doing that. But I had been inspired to write a book for a long time. I just didn't have the resources to do it myself. I imagine you run into people that always say that they're going to write a book or they're writing a book,
yeah.
And it takes them 5-10 years to do it. And they do maybe one chapter a year because it's so challenging to do it. But I really highly encourage somebody, if they're considering writing a book, to at least consider a ghostwriter as an option. It was outstanding.
Yeah, I'm sort of toying with the idea myself. Obviously, I haven't done a book thus far, but I've seriously considered it. And that's certainly some great advice. And when it comes time for me to get a little bit more serious about it, I'm definitely going to talk with you, Scott, and get some tips and advice on that. Because, the more information, I look at life this way, Scott, the more information and education that you can give yourself along the way, and it doesn't really matter within reason where you're getting it from. If you know somebody that's, whether it be in the golf business or elsewhere, that has some experience in something, it's smart for you to seek that individual or individuals out and draw from their knowledge when sort of doing your own thing. Because I think too many people sort of fly by the seat of their pants and a lot of times don't maybe come out with their best effort as a result. And so that's where it's important. That's, again, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the program. I know that you're very active, not only in your golf business, but in the marketing end and promoting your business and have done a fabulous job. And I know you've been well received in a lot of the different groups that I've seen you posting in on Facebook and, as I said, some of the other media sites. So this is why I wanted you to come on the program and share some of that knowledge, not only with the general public listeners, but also some of the other professionals that are tuning into the show each week.
No, thank you. Appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to giving up some good content as we go here tonight.
Yeah. Now, the books that you've written, would you say that they're more geared towards the advanced business golfer or the new business golfer, or maybe a little of both?
Very much a combination of both, and that's been intentional. And even in my own teachings, the way I teach golf, I don't focus on just teaching the best players. I know there's a lot of instructors out there that are most exclusively with top junior players, top college players, and even some professionals. But I actually enjoy the most teaching people that are just trying to break 100. And my core of my client base is between 90 and 100. I have a lot of them that are still trying to break 100 or even new golfers just getting into the game. I actually teach very few people that are in the single-digit handicap. So most of my core base is between 90 and 110 score-wise, even with some new golfers that are just getting into the game. So the books that I've written, sure, go ahead.
No. Sorry, I didn't realize you were continuing your thought. No, go ahead. Finish your thought, and then I'll ask you a question.
So the book, Starting with the Game of Golf and the Art of Business, that's a story about a successful business person who's a 19 handicapper and how his experience would be going around a championship golf course like Bethpage Black. And then the 19 Holes of Business Golf Conversation, that's geared towards all levels of players who are just desiring to be more profitable with their business golf and to seamlessly work their way through a round of business golf without actually selling, but through developing relationships. So that can be, and even my keynote presentation that's related to that book, I highlight some key points for experienced players, what they can add to their round of business golf, even though they're already good at golf, and then what the new golfer should do out there during a round of business golf. And then the instruction books, the Stop Slicing books, those are more geared towards the higher handicappers that are struggling
sure.
to slice.
Do you think, just kind of going back a little bit to what you just said a few minutes ago about working with some of the higher handicap players, I enjoy that more myself as well. And I think there's a higher excitement level in dealing with a student of that sort of that range. And the reason why I say that, and I'm just curious to see if you agree, when you start getting into the lower handicap players, it's a harder transition. You know, when you start dealing with the two handicap or even a scratch golfer and you're trying to work with their game, you're not going to see anything monumental. Whereas if you've got somebody that's trying to break 100, there just seems to be more enthusiasm. Once they've broken that 100 or they've, you know, starting to strike the ball better and with more confidence, you can just see the excitement building in their face. Do you find that as well with a lot of your students?
Absolutely. I mean, I took a guy this summer that came out and he said, I want to play my company golf league. So we put together a program for him, and his first goal was that he could play the 9 holes in his company league without being told to pick up his ball. So they have an 8-stroke limit rule in their league, and that was his goal.
Right.
He was elated. After 16 weeks, I think it was about the 14th week, he emailed me and said, I did it. I played all 9 holes without picking up my ball. I mean, that's awesome.
Wow,
when you can do
that
for somebody. And so he's fired up for next year. Now he's recalibrated his goals, and he's really going after it. And we got him a practice range membership at the private facility. And now next year his goal is to break 50. So that's going to be a huge step. And you'll probably notice I speak lots in terms of 9-hole experiences because that's a lot of my clients are playing 9 holes these days. They either don't have time for 18 holes, or they're just at a level where 9 holes is more appropriate for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems that's happened in the industry in the past is, you know, it was a little bit easier, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Not that I'm trying to date myself, but, you know, it was a little bit easier to play 18 holes. You didn't have as many golfers out there. But now, you know, in the last decade or so where there's been a big influx of golfers, it's not always easy to get out and play 18, either just availability on a course. You know, not everybody has access to a private course. So some of your public, courses and things like that are just, you know, quite congested. So I think it's smart that the industry is trying to sort of navigate people into playing 9 holes, and the instructors are doing that as well, is you know, starting with 9 holes. That doesn't mean they're ever going to play 18, but just to focus on 9 holes and not so much on the bigger picture, because I think that, as you say, a lot of people just don't have time these days, and it just makes more sense to work within somebody's boundaries than trying to, you know, get them to do something that they're just not likely going to have the time for anyways.
Right, and I also am a big supporter of tee it forward or modification, modified tees programs. I wrote a report titled the Critical Information Every New Golfer Must Know, and then I also wrote a report that I titled Scott Seiferlein's New Golfer Rules, and we talk about different places to tee off and different systems to use. I grew up on a 9-hole course that was only 2,700 yards, and it was fantastic because I was able to break 50 so quickly. And you start to see those scores, and maybe it was fictitious at that time for me to believe that I was a good player, but who cares? I believed it, and I kept going after it and kept getting lower and lower scores. Eventually started entering tournaments, and the scores went up a little bit, but I was still so inspired early on that I was motivated and kept after it until my scores were lower, even on the more difficult courses.
Well, and that's the thing, and it really comes down to motivation, and I think that's something that, especially when you're dealing with a newer golfer, and even particularly with the ladies that are just sort of starting out, they're intimidated as it is. So if you can do something that's going to build their confidence, and find some people might say, well, it's not really a true test. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It gives them that confidence boost. It gets them excited about playing. Whereas if you're taking them out on a difficult course to begin with and they're just all over the place and they're just not playing well or feel intimidated, then they're more apt to check out of the game than they are to stay tuned in. And I think that's smart. And I was much like you, Scott, growing up. I played on shorter courses and that sort of helped. I mean, I started at a very early age. I'm going to be 50 next year. And I started playing a little more officially, if you will, when I was seven. My father took me out and got me out of my first golf course when I was seven. And that's exactly what he did. Is he took me out onto a short nine, and we played that, and I was excited. So, I mean, that's the way to do it. Let me ask you something, just because you mentioned about, somebody playing in a golf event. What advice would you have for a new golfer playing in their first business golf event?
Well, be prepared, number one. I mean, it depends on how much time they have to get ready. If the boss threw it on them and they have to run right out there, a couple of days of preparation, and all of a sudden they're playing on a nice course, or versus if they have a couple months to prepare. So it really depends on the situation. If it's an emergency crash course that they need over 2 or 3 days before their event, I encourage them to stay focused on pace of play, learning a little bit of the terminology, and some of the basic etiquette and rules so that they can go out there and make their playing partners feel comfortable about them being out there. If it's a situation where they're playing their own ball, actually, I'll tell you a story I did this summer. I had a friend of mine who went out for a round of business golf with me, and we invited one other person. And I didn't tell him that this other person had never played golf before, because I knew, based on his personality, my friend would not show up if he knew this guy had never played golf before. And I wanted this business relationship to develop a little bit further.
Right.
And we were going to play our own ball. So we get there, we arrive, and he finds out that this guy's a new golfer. And I said, just relax. Everything's going to be good.
Yeah.
Watch this. And I took him through this system that I teach new golfers, where they actually tee off at 50 yards starting out. And if they score 5 or better, I use a graduation system. And then they go to 75 yards and then 100 yards. And they graduate in 25-yard increments. And he just had a blast doing that, because he wasn't pressured into hitting a ball across 4 football fields before he got to the green. And he was able to get on the green in 1 or 2 shots. And 2 or 3 putts later, he's got his 5, and he's moving on. The experienced player that we were playing with really loved it, because we played 9 holes in an hour and 40 minutes.
Yep.
So everybody had a really good time. We were able to have some business golf conversation, and it was just really outstanding. So that's a great example of taking a new golfer out on the golf course and giving them a good experience. If they've got some more time, like you mentioned, what else would we do for a new golfer? Then there's you can throw in some golf fitness, getting them prepared, because you'd be surprised how many people don't understand how much fitness is required to go out and play an 18-hole golf outing, and then they're still sore 3 days later because they weren't hydrated, they weren't prepared physically to go out and play 18 holes of golf. And then, of course, obviously, we want to encourage them, if they've got some time, to learn some short game skills, to find a golf coach that they can work with over a couple-month period before that big first golf outing that they're going to play in.
One of the things that I've heard, and you're 100% right on, we've talked quite a bit here on Golf Talk Live about the short game, and especially with new golfers. I think one of the biggest mistakes that has happened over the years, and not so much in the more current years, but going back, as I said, you know, a few decades, you know, everybody was sort of focused on teaching the full swing and things like that, but more of I guess the higher level instructors out there now are starting to realize that they need to focus more on the short game first and really getting people comfortable and, you know, chipping and putting and that sort of thing, and sort of work backwards, if you will, from the green back to the tee as opposed to the other way around. And I think people are finding it a much easier transition to learning the game than trying to, you know, worry about gripping and ripping it from day one and not getting good results. And not developing really right. The sound skills, because you know, as we all know, you're lucky if maybe you're teeing off with your driver, you know, 13, 14 holes on any you know, given golf course. The majority of your shots are going to be made with your mid irons and down, and of course your putting plays a huge role. So why would you want to focus teaching somebody solely on their longer clubs and particularly their driver? And learning the full swing if they don't understand the sort of mechanics of the short game where the majority of their scoring is going to come from anyways.
No, I agree 100% with you, Ted. From a business standpoint, I don't always do that because it's not sexy. And
no.
If they're playing an outing, they want to fix their slice. They want to hit a far
yeah.
tee shot, even if it's just one tee shot that they hit over 200 yards and the foursome uses their tee shot in that outing. So if they really want that, I'll get in their head as to what they really want, and we can do that in a session. But to the best of my ability, I try and get them to understand that we really should learn the game backwards, starting from the hole, going backwards, mm-hmm. and usually try and get them to make it their idea that, yes, okay, we should do that. And that way, in a lot of cases, I can show them some chipping drills that help them reduce their slice with their tee shot anyways. And once they understand that, then it's a much more enjoyable for them because they get to tackle both things that they wanted to accomplish.
Exactly. Scott, just before we move on here, just one more question about your flagship book, as you said, the Game of Golf and the Art of Business. If there's one thing that you would like the reader to take from the book, what would that be?
I want them to take the lessons as a whole and understand how they apply to business and really just apply it. I love when people apply because it's so easy to read a book and you're just like, oh, that was entertaining, but then they don't actually do anything about it or make any changes. So that's a big thing that I would love for people to take away is application. Even though it is a fun, entertaining story, there are things that you can take away and say, yeah, I'm gonna do that, and it's going to help both my golf game and my business.
Perfect. Scott, I'm just going to just take a quick little break here just to remind the golfers that are just tuning in a little bit later, obviously who my guest is, but also how they can either call into the program or contact the program, and then we'll get right back with some more questions. For those of you that are tuning in a little bit later in the broadcast tonight, my special guest this evening is Scott Seiferlein, PGA Golf Guru and the owner of GrandRapidsGolfLessons.com. He's a four-time author of business golf and golf instruction books, and we'll read those out to you a little bit later in the show again and give you the link where you can purchase the books. He's just talking a little bit about not only the books, but just the business side of it as well, and just sort of how to help some of the students out there. And I really wanted to, as I said earlier in the program, I really wanted to get him on the show tonight and just to talk about that. Scott, I want to just, before we get into the next questions here, I just want to take one more second here. Just to let, since we were talking about putting, just to let some of the listeners out there know about a great putting tool from Star Putter. Take a listen.
Hi, this is Ted from Golf Talk Live. Are you looking to make more putts, shoot lower scores, and just play better golf? Now you can with a Star Putter putting tool. Simply use the tool 5 minutes before your next round and make 3 to 5 more putts. Practice with Star Putter 15 to 20 minutes, 3 times a week, and lower your handicap after just 10 rounds. Star Putter putting tool. Available now at starputter.com.
All right, welcome back. Scott, I just wanted to ask just a few things, just about golf in general, just some of the things that we see with some of your students and that. And just as an example, what are some of the most common flaws that you see with the average golfer?
Just through the impact zone. I mean, those are the flaws that really stand out. And most people don't necessarily teach impact because it happens so fast and it's easier to teach backswing. But impact is what I try and spend most of my focus on. And I tell a lot of my students that that probably in the past they've worked with a coach who's taught them about grip, stance, alignment, and posture, and that they've been told that
right.
those are fundamentals. But if they were fundamentals, everybody would do them the same, the good players. And there's good players that they set up like an unfolded lawn chair to swipe a line from that golf movie I'm drawing a blank on right now, Tin Cup. But have all kinds of different grips, and you have all kinds of different stances and alignments. I mean, Corey Pavin set up with a closed stance, and Kenny Perry set up with an open stance, and then they have an opposite ball flight. So it's across the board. So I really try and teach impact and how the lead hand works through impact, how the trail hand works through impact. So impact is issues, especially the scooping through the impact zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very common flaw that I see. But another interesting flaw that I see and I like to highlight is actually swing speed. So many people swing, in my opinion, way too slow because they've been told to slow down all their life. I had a gentleman I worked with back in 2009, he's still with me now, 5 years later. But back in 2009, he came out and he was hitting his 4-iron about 150 yards. And I watched him hit a few, and he said he wanted his long irons farther. And he was hitting it reasonably solid. So, and he was reasonably close to being on the right path. But his swing speed wasn't there. And so I actually just had him do some drills to swing faster. And the interesting thing was that there's some psychology here. He was actually afraid to do it. He tried it, and then he said, wow, but I could never actually hit a ball swinging that fast. I said, really? Well, why not? He said, well, my friends have always told me to swing slower. And I said, well, just do me a favor, and I don't care where it goes. It's a big ocean out there. It doesn't matter what direction it goes. And I said, just go ahead and swing at that speed that you were – I had him using the speed stick for a while. I said, swing a golf club at that speed that you were using the speed stick. And he hits a few balls, and they go reasonably straight. In fact, a couple of them went straighter than his normal shot, and they went much farther, and he was going about 180 with his 4-iron. So he was pretty excited about that. And then at the end of the session, he still said, you know what, though? My friends just aren't going to let me swing that fast. And I started to laugh. I go, really, are you kidding me? But he was serious, and it was really a psychological battle that he had to overcome. And he's done pretty well with it over the years, but it took him a while to get to the point where he was comfortable ignoring his friends and trusting that faster swing would not cause him to lose a whole lot of control. And he went and eventually had an even par 9-hole round a couple years later. So he was really impressed with that.
That's just a big thing, Scott,
on swing speed.
Yeah, I suspect, just hearing that story that he was probably playing some of those friends for money and they probably didn't want him to get any better, so they were trying to egg him on. And that's what it takes to me because it doesn't, that's what I get from it is they were probably fleecing him for a few dollars every week and were afraid he might improve if he started swinging a little bit faster. But no, that's a great story.
And then Jim Rohn, I don't know if you're familiar with Jim Rohn, the personal development coach, but he would always say that you are the average of the five people that you hang out with the most. And this unconsciously, a lot of times we actually keep people that hang out with us at our level.
Right. What I used to do growing up in my earlier days when I was, learning the game, I actually took some lessons at a very young age. I shouldn't say actually that young, but earlier than what I am now. And, you know, I won't get into the specifics, but I wasn't very satisfied with what went on. But most of it I taught myself. And, of course, my father was an exceptionally good golfer, so he sort of guided me along the way. But one of the things that I had always sort of done along my journey, if you will, before I got to the level I am now and obviously teaching, is I always try to seek out. I enjoyed actually playing. I would go up to the golf course. I mean, I always had regular friends that I played with, but I also enjoyed going a lot by myself. And I would always try to get into a group of golfers that I knew were better than I was. And not just, you know, modestly better, but quite a bit better. And
awesome, yeah.
But I wanted to make, you know what I'm saying? And to me, a lot of people make the mistake of going the other way around. And the problem is, like you said, you kind of get brought down to that level. And I think if you really want to improve, obviously you need to get sound instruction, but I think you also need to play with people that are going to bring your game up, not bring your game down.
Right, right. And, you know, that's a championship mindset. And that's not going to happen with everybody. I had one student a few years ago that actually went from a 14 to 11. And then he went back to a 14. I asked him what happened, and he said, "I wasn't comfortable at an 11. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
That was his mindset. He just was more comfortable at a 14, so he stopped doing the things that he had made the changes to play better, but he stopped doing those, and he was just more comfortable playing at a 14 with the people that he played with.
Yeah, sometimes I think people are afraid of change, this is where really your early assessments of a student are important, to really find out what their goals are, what their desires are, because I think if it's certainly ambitious of an instructor to want to get them to a higher level, but there are some out there that just are quite happy. They just want to be able to play comfortably with the group that they're with, and want to maybe just make some modest improvements, and I think you have to recognize that as an instructor and not sort of put your will onto these individuals, because sometimes they're just not receptive to that. And as you say, you know, he was more comfortable sort of going back to a 14 than he was at the 11. And there's some out there that are just
like... Absolutely, and that's a business strategy for a lot of golf instructors that they would benefit by being aware of. Some people don't want to play all that much better. Sometimes they don't even want to change their score. They might just want to change their ball flight a little bit or see something different with their ball flight. I had one gentleman, he was started to hook it like crazy, and I thought, well, we're going a little too far here. We stopped slicing, but now you're hooking it too much. He said, "I don't care. I am so glad that ball flight's not going right." So you got sometimes... People aren't just, and in fact, I have a lot of golfers that one of the first things they'll say to me in our first session is they'll say, "Well, I don't want to be a pro," as if I was going to make them a pro or something like that. But I guess apparently with their previous experiences with coaching, they were thrown so many things that were high-level stuff that they just weren't interested in doing, and they just wanted to make a little tweak here or there and enjoy the game more.
Well, probably one of the best tips that I ever got, and actually it came a little bit later, but was actually from Mo Norman. And I've talked a little bit on the program before, Scott, about my experience with Mo Norman back up in Canada. And I was out at the range, and he really just said to me, don't think about it. Just get up there and hit it. You know what to do. Just get up there and hit it. Play the shot. And I mean, obviously he didn't get into it as technical, but the idea was that he said that one of the things that kills a lot of golfers is they overthink the process and they get too many things cluttering up their mind. And Mo was just the type of person that he just sort of walked up to the ball and he literally just did it. He hit it and shot after shot, they would just be like, like a dart. And you know, he just got his game to such a point that he didn't think about all the things. I mean, it never even managed to get into his head what he was doing. He just went and did it. And I think even though that's maybe oversimplifying it a little bit, I think what he was basically trying to say was don't overthink the process. Just get up there with what you've been taught and just execute the shot that you need to execute and just do it, and don't sit there and dwell on it and, you know, stand over the ball for the next 3 or 4 minutes hovering, waiting to, you know, till that perfect thought comes in your mind, and then you just get cluttered. And I think that's what a lot of people make the mistake, playing, is they just get too bound up in the thought process of what they need to do and overthink the process.
And that's such a beautiful way to play golf, is to go out there and take the game that you have and play. And then if it doesn't work out, practice it, work it out on the practice range. But when you go out to play, it's time
play.
To play.
Yeah.
Caveman
and
golf,
that's something
right?
That, yeah, exactly. And that's something that Scott, that really a lot of people have to understand. And we've said this with many of the other teaching professionals that have come on the program here. We've talked about a number of times where too many people don't know, they want to take their range game out to their actual game. And the problem is what you do on the range is not what you do out on the course. The range is there specifically to work out the bugs and the kinks and that sort of thing and to work on the techniques. But when you get out there on the golf course, it's time to play. And whatever game you have, if you're slicing still a little bit that day, then that's what you work with when you're on the course. That's what you play with. Don't sit and try to correct it and do, you know, all the changes that you maybe were taught in a previous lesson while you're playing the game, because you're just going to end up having a lousy round and get frustrated. And a lot of people fall into that same trap. They get out there and, you know, they're thinking about what the instructor says. So what are some tips that you think that to help people overcome that? What would you suggest to a student that's having that problem?
That they're overthinking?
Well, that they're taking the range game out to the golf course. In other words, you've taught them some things in the lessons to work on while they're in their practice session, but they keep taking it out onto the golf course. They're overthinking that process while they're out there. What do you do to try to combat that? Because that's something I think a lot of, especially high handicap golfers, are guilty of. They tend to take what they're doing on the range out into the golf course.
Exactly.
All that
right,
mechanics.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, one of the things we do is I will highlight balls per minute. How many balls per minute are they using in their practice session? And so balls per minute, a lot of golfers that struggle, they do what I call the whack groan drag, and it's where you whack a ball, and before you even look where it goes, you groan, and then you drag the next ball from the pile, and you're hitting 4 or 5 balls per minute. Whereas if they get into a mode where they're actually playing a course on the range, visualizing where the hazards would be on the first hole, where the fairway would be on the first hole, and playing a shot and then saying, okay, well, that went into the right rough and behind a tree, so now I have to hit a shot that's going to carve a little left to right and around the tree, under the tree, and up 30 yards short of the green, and then they actually hit that shot on the range. They might even walk over to the rough in the range, on the side of the range, to hit that shot as an example, so that they're actually playing a round of golf on the range. And that can be beneficial to get them more into a playing mode versus just the whack, groan, drag that you see a lot of players do.
Yeah. And obviously you want to utilize your range time. When you only have a few minutes before, hopefully you're smart enough to drive to the golf course, you know, more than 15 minutes before you're teeing off. But if you're one of those ones, then, you know, it's okay to just hit a few warm-up shots. You're not going to go through, you know, at that point, in my opinion, I think that's when you sort of focus on your pre-shot routine and get that, sort of in sync and ready when you're coming late to the golf course. But if you allowed yourself a little extra time on the range, that's a great idea. What you said is to take some of those practice shots, you know, go over to the side of the range and maybe if there's some rough area and practice some of those shots that you might be faced with. That's where you want to do it, is on the range and not take all the mechanics, if you will, out to the golf course and just go out and play, as you said.
Absolutely. With our remaining time here, did you want to shift into a little more on the business side for the other golf instructors?
Yeah, I that was one of the things I wanted to move into next, talk about some of the advice for teaching professionals and coaches. You mentioned earlier on in the program, you talked about those that wanted to write their first book. But in addition to coaching golfers and speaking and writing books, you also have consulted many golf instructors on how to market their business. What advice do you have for the golf instructor who's just starting out?
To learn guerrilla marketing and direct response marketing. A lot of these guys think that if they get more knowledge or if they buy more technology, that's the way they need to go. They need to become the best, most knowledgeable instructor. When in reality, the attorney that is the most knowledgeable attorney, he's dead in the water if he can't relate to his clients. He's dead in the water if he can't market his business. And the same thing with a doctor. And the same thing with a golf instructor. So you can be the smartest golf instructor, have the most knowledge, have the best technology, but if you don't know how to market it, you're going to have an empty driving range, and nobody's going to be filling your book. So marketing is a big part of that, to have that balance.
Let's expand on that a little bit, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, and I think you'll understand what I'm talking about in a moment here, but I've noticed in a lot of the groups, particularly on Facebook and that, quite often some of the questions that get posed in there is about technology, and certainly it's great to have some of the technology that's out there, but one of the things that I see quite often is, you know, the questions, well, I'm thinking about getting this, and I'm thinking about upgrading to that, and it just seems to be more technology-focused. And I wonder if sometimes these guys are getting in the trap with some of the students out there that are maybe more techie and that type of thing, and they love all that technology, but the vast majority of them couldn't care less. And I just wonder if some of the instructors, like you just pointed out, are focusing too much on that and trying to gain too much knowledge and not really understanding their students as well as they should.
Oh, right. It's interesting. You never see a question of, I wonder if I should invest $10,000 into personal development on those sites. It's always, I wonder if I should invest $10,000 in TrackMan or some other type of technology. So at some point, there has to be some sort of balance. I actually think it should be reversed. You can probably increase the odds that you'll be able to afford $10,000 to buy some technology if you've developed yourself personally first and develop your marketing skills first.
Yeah, and that's it all comes down to really being a good salesperson. I mean, you can have all the skills that you want and so forth, but if you can't market yourself well and get yourself out there to attract people to your facility or to you in itself, all of that technology and all of that skill level that you've acquired doesn't mount up to a hill of beans. And you know, I mean, and the thing that always gets me, and this is something that I've learned not only in the golf end of things, but I've been involved in other businesses as well prior, is, you know, you can have all of the titles that you want after your name and all of the insignia and so forth, but again, it doesn't mount up to anything if you're only getting one or two students a day or one a week or something like that. People are not impressed by so much by your credentials as they are about what you can do for them. And, you know, credentials are nice to a point, but if you're spending all of your time out there getting the latest, and that's not saying that you shouldn't keep yourself updated, but if you're spending all of your time, getting recertified for this and upgraded to that and so on and so forth, that you're not really focusing on the reason you're there to begin with, you know, come the end of the day, like
things get out of balance, and that's the case. And I fell into that trap years ago, and I had one of those websites that I call the meisgreat.com website, where it highlighted things that I had accomplished, but it didn't speak to the golfer, and the golfer doesn't care what I've accomplished. You'd be surprised. I actually had somebody ask me if I was a PGA member the other day, and it was a large company, over 10,000 employees, and they were considering hiring me to speak. And it was one of the first times I'd been asked in years if I was actually even a PGA member. And most of my clients don't ask me whether I'm a good player or not. A few of them do.
Right.
But for the most part, they're more interested in what can I do for them? So they're reading my messages, my marketing messages, my marketing videos as far as what's in it for them. It's really about them. It's not about me or what I've done.
Exactly. And what about for the more advanced, successful golf instructor who's already got a good reputation, but maybe looking to take his or her income to the next level? They want to up their game, if you will, in business. What advice would you have for them?
Right, and I think that they want to get out there and set their ego aside. They've won awards and things like that, but again, it comes down to bringing the focus more on the actual golfer. And one example, I use the I to you ratio. And how many I's are on your website versus U's? A lot of these websites and sales letters and marketing pieces and flyers and promotional materials that golf instructors are putting out, you can count the I's and very few U's. And there's usually more I's than U's. So I like to see only about 33% I's and 67% U's. So
use.
Speak to the golfer versus I did this, I did that. And that's going to get them to the next level. The awards and certifications, there's so many out there that are top instructors. They've won their section teacher of the year, and they've won other awards for teaching, but how are they making $50,000 to $70,000? How can they not be making incomes more like attorneys and doctors and dentists make? We are professionals. We should charge like professionals. We went to a lot of school, just like these other professions did. So how is it that we have some of our top instructors in our country that are only pulling in $50,000 to $70,000?
Well, and as you said earlier, I think a lot of it is, in the marketing, really. If you look at most of even the top instructors, they're certainly, can play well. But they're not going to be in the top 10 money earners on the PGA Tour. Their game is as such. Their skill set, if you will, is on the teaching or the coaching side, not necessarily the playing side. And people seem to not understand that. They figure that just because this person is ranked such and such, I'll give you an example, David Ledbetter. I'm sure if David went on a tour, he would probably, be maybe average on tour, but he's not going to be Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson. These guys have a unique talent. Now, in reverse, if you were to take Phil or Tiger, they might be able to give some tips, but they may not be a great instructor. So everybody has gifts and talents. And, this is where, an instructor needs to utilize the talents that they've been given and not worried about whether they're the best player out there. Some of their students may actually beat them if they were to play head-on-head.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Let me ask you go ahead.
Yeah, and another big thing is just time management and having a realistic expectation of how much marketing is required to actually generate a client, how much investment, time, proprietary knowledge, and marketing dollars from an advertising marketing perspective is actually required to acquire a new client and then maintain that client for year after year after year. I talk to a lot of golf instructors and I ask them, well, how many hours a week are you dedicating to marketing? And most answer 1 hour a week.
Yeah.
And that's just laughable, and it's insane. When you're running a business and you're dedicating 1 hour a week to growing and maintaining that business, no wonder they're not achieving the revenues. So I put together for some of my clients that I'm working with on the consulting side to help them grow their business, I put together an accountability scorecard that gives them ideas on, okay, they should be sending out this many press releases, they should be spending this much time writing sales letters, they should be putting X amount of hours in per week dedicated to social media and developing copy and all those different skill sets that are required to generate a client.
You know, what's interesting is I use this show as an example. Obviously, I teach in that as well, but even though this program only airs one one evening a week, there's a lot of preparation that goes into it. You know, not just corresponding with potential guests and things like that, but just thinking several months ahead. What's the direction I want to take the show? Next year, I'm going to be adding a segment, which you may or may not have heard me talk about in the program before, but called Coach's Corner, where we'll get some of the instructors back on here, some of the ones that we've had previously, and some new ones are going to be joining in the mix, and giving an opportunity for some of the listeners to call in and ask some questions and things like that. And people don't realize how much is involved in that, even though it's only a two-hour program and one day a week. There's a lot of prep and a lot of work that has to go in to prepare for that. A lot of announcements. I mean, you've seen them several times. I'm sure you've read them. I'm on Facebook into all the different groups, letting them know who the guests are going to be and going on afterwards and thanking the guests for coming on and letting everybody know. So, I'm always in these different networks promoting and getting the word out there. And as a result, I get people every week emailing me and calling me wanting to come on the program because they're hearing about it. Now, if I just sort of, did the show and didn't say anything and didn't do anything, it would fizzle out very quickly because nobody would know about it. And it's the same thing
exactly.
With the instructors. If you're out there and you've got all these credentials and you've set up a XYZ range down the street and you're opening up your doors, but you haven't done a lick of marketing or promoting the business, you might get a few passerbys that are driving down the highway and say, oh, look at that, I might check that out one day. But other than that, you're not going to get too many customers.
Exactly, and congratulations on the Coach's Corner, too, by the way. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, and Scott, I'm going to throw that out there, and I hope that you will take part in it. I know your schedule's tight, and we'll see if we can work you in there, but I think it's going to be fun. Not to get on my end of it here, because I'm going to talk about it when I let you go in a bit. But that's one segment that I'm working on for next year, and I've had some very good reception on that. And I would like to invite you into the mix as well. I think you've got some great insight and some great tips for the listeners. And I know that I've had a lot of feedback. A lot of them are looking forward to having this in the new year. This year has been really more about just sort of introducing my audience to some of the great instructors from all over the country and some around the world, just sort of giving them a little tease, if you will, of some of the guys and gals that are going to be coming in the program, and also doing another segment, actually another entire show on the women of golf, which is going to be strictly geared for women only, not that men can't listen, but targeting that market as well. And former LPGA player Cindy Miller is going to be coming on and co-hosting with that segment as well. So I'm really excited about that. But, my point, Scott, is that there's a lot of prep work and things for me to do and prepare for this show every week. And a lot of people probably don't realize that. And it's the same thing, as I said a moment ago, in the teaching end of it as well. You have to be out there and you have to be doing the sales letters and marketing and promoting and things like that. It's not just about giving the lesson on the range or on the course. It's about getting your ideas and things out there so that people are going to be drawn to your business.
Very much so, and that that multiplies, especially for the person who's an independent contractor and has to develop all their own business versus somebody that's at a facility that provides them all their business. So you really have to understand where your business is coming from, where you want it to come from, and then you can. And when you understand those things, you can design the type of life that you want to live and create the income and the schedule that you want to live.
Exactly. And it's just something, and again, I can't emphasize enough, this was one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the program tonight, is I think that a lot of, as you say, a lot of people are out there, especially in our profession, but really any business, tend to flounder, just unsure of what to do. And I think that somebody that's like yourself, that's sort of gone through the licks, if you will, and kind of formulated a game plan for yourself. I mean, I'm sure you've had your down moments and things like that throughout your career, but you've managed to accumulate experience and understanding of what you need to do to make your business successful. And as a result, you're reaping the benefits now. So this is one of the reasons, doing my type of show. I want to bring to my listeners people such as yourself, professionals in the business, as opposed to me just talking about myself. I mean, I could do that very easily for 2 hours, come on here and talk every week about myself. But I want to bring professionals such as yourself in here to not only let the average golfer out there know what's going on, but also to let other teaching professionals know that by networking, communicating together, that we can share information and make everybody, just like as I said, playing golf earlier on, bring them up to that higher level. And the only way to do that is for us to talk amongst ourselves.
Exactly, exactly, yes. And I'll leave just one last thought for your golf mm-hmm. instructor listeners on the time blocking side and how valuable that was for me is when I started to intentionally block time for marketing. I refused to take clients during that time, even if I could have. And it was hard mentally to do that in the beginning because I always thought that, well, I should just be an open book and I should just go out and teach whenever people want to do business because there's not that much business out there. But in reality, there's a lot of business out there and you can design it the way you want. But when I first started doing this, I remember early on I always dedicated Wednesday afternoons exclusively for marketing. And I had somebody call me up and they wanted to book a 2 o'clock time. And they called me up Wednesday morning and wanted to book a 2 o'clock time Wednesday afternoon. And I told them that I was booked. Now, I didn't tell them what I was booked with, of course, because that's not any of their business. But
right.
I just told them that I was booked, and I said, but I do have some time available on Thursday. And they said, well, I can't do it at that time on Thursday. I've got a dentist appointment. And I said, well, you've got the weekend. He said, no, I'm playing in a club championship this weekend, and I really want to get this session in Wednesday. And it's my only option. And and I said, well, I just can't do it. And so I thought I lost the business. He hung up, and wouldn't you know it, 5 minutes later I get a phone call. He says, I've rescheduled my crown with my dentist. I'll see you Thursday. And that was so eye-opening. That was so eye-opening. It was like, wow, this really works. This is the way to do business. And
exactly.
It's better ultimately for the client. They make it a priority. They get what they want out of my services, and then it's a better business model for the golf instructor. It's a more profitable business model. Creates
exactly.
more leverage.
Scott, I know that we're limited for time here. I know you've given me a lot of time, and I know that you haven't been feeling too well today, so I appreciate that. But before we give another plug for your books, and I just wanted to ask you, you know, now that you're shifting into winter mode, as it were, can you just give us maybe a recap or an idea of what some of the activities you have planned for your golfers, and how is your business going to change through the winter months?
Yes, I work aggressively to encourage my golfers to understand that golf is a year-round process, even up here in the north. So we do offer indoor coaching in the winter, January through March. I do take 2 months off, November and December, so I let my clients rest at that time, but then I encourage them to continue to practice and to take coaching from me January through March indoors, and then, of course, outdoors April through October. So I use these 2 months, November and December, to catch up on marketing projects that I didn't get caught up on during the summer. I use it. I'm also launching a consulting program for other golf instructors through a website, usagolfmarketing.com, where I help mm-hmm. them understand how important SEO and search engine optimization, how important
right.
that is to generating new business for their golf instruction business. And then I have some back-end coaching programs that teaches them about getting free publicity, writing sales letters, how to attend a networking event, how to make those profitable, and numerous other things that make their golf instruction business more profitable. And then in January, I go back into the focus on the coaching side.
Are you going to be, I'm going to throw this out there since you mentioned January, are you going to be heading down to the PGA show this year at all?
I don't have plans to do that right now. I have a newborn at home. And
okay.
I have a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a newborn at home, so I'll probably be very limited with my travel in the next year or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, congratulations on the newborn. Yeah, that's always fun. Well, maybe the year after you can take them on the road and it'll be a little bit easier on you, but I'm going to try and make it down for a few days. I'm obviously not going to, I'm going to be an attendee, not an exhibitor, but certainly going to connect with a few people that have invited me to come down and make do it. But the reason I asked that is I thought if you were going to be down there, I would like to to meet with you for a few minutes face-to-face as opposed to here on Golf Talk Live. But Scott, let's just let the listeners know here where they can get your book, and we'll just go through the list of books again. Again, my guest this evening is Scott Seiferlein, PGA Golf Guru and owner of GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com. And here are four books that he's written that I highly recommend that you get. And the first one is obviously his flagship, The Game of Golf and the Art of Business, which is really a story that Scott has put together, and I think that you'll enjoy it. And I'm going to make sure I get a copy because I want to read that as well. The other books, 19 Holes of Business Golf Conversation, and the other two, Stop Slicing in Five Swings and Stop Slicing in Five Swings for Left-Handed Golfers. I know you can't give out any secrets, but I got to ask this just to play a little devil's advocate. How did you come up with the title Stop Slicing in Five Swings? What motivated you to do that book?
You're not going to believe this, but I actually created that long before I created the book. And I was listening to an interview about how to create a unique selling position, which is also known as a USP in the direct response world. And it has to be short, very benefit-driven, and they use the example of corn's gone in 5 days guaranteed. So I swiped it. I completely stole it from another industry. And I thought about, okay, if I'm working with somebody who slices the ball, how many balls does it take before I can get them to hit their first draw? And I did some experiment with some of my clients as far as how many swings it would take before I could teach them how to hit their first draw. And I determined that 5 was a pretty good number. Most of them could do it in less, some a few more, but most everybody got it within 5 swings. So I felt very strong that I could guarantee that. And so then that became a unique selling position for me, and then I wrote a report on it and then turned it into a book eventually down the road. The left-handed version is back in the 80s, Burger King came out on April Fool's Day with the left-handed Whopper. So I was inspired to come out with a left-handed version of my book, and I flipped the pictures around and flipped the language around, and there you have it, an easy way to publish two books out of one.
Fantastic. And in fact, I think I remember that when they came up with that back in the 80s. Now, that's brilliant. And see, that just goes to show for the listeners here, you know, if you're a little bit creative, you can come up with some great, you know, maybe great product or in this case, some great books and be able to utilize it in your business. And Scott, you certainly have done a fantastic job. Let's let the folks, again, know where they can get your books.
Sure, and even if they're not creative, Ted, I want them to feel like they can still do this, and they can. I remember going to an event where Gene Simmons, the lead singer from Kiss, was a keynote presenter, and he stood in front of 1,000 people and said, "I don't have a creative bone in my body." Now think about that for a second.
Yeah,
the lead singer of Kiss, one of the most creative marketing bands in history. Mm-hmm. He says he doesn't have a creative bone in his body. But he gets his ideas from other industries, and you can always use what I call swipe and deploy and take a good idea from that somebody else has already been creative about and think, okay, how can I apply that to my business? It's a really good way for somebody who's not necessarily that creative. You don't always have to work off of a blank slate. But thanks for having me on and asking where they can get the books. They can get at GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com/books. Or if they just go to GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com, they can easily find the books on that site.
Perfect. And if they want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yes, golfers can get in touch with me directly through GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com, and then golf instructors can reach me through USAGolfMarketing.com.
Perfect. Scott, I want to thank you for coming on Golf Talk Live. And again, I know that you've been a little under the weather today, so I appreciate you spending a little extra time with me. So I hope that you'll go and get better and enjoy the weekend with your family and that. Scott, I really appreciate, again, you doing this. And just one last thing, Scott, if you wouldn't mind, I've obviously got the link in that, but if you can send me, when you're feeling a little bit better, maybe the next week or so, the jacket for your books, What I've done as a courtesy to all of my guests on here that have books out there is I put them up with the links on my website, just so that people that are sort of perusing through my site can take a look at your books and then follow back to your links and purchase a copy if they so choose. So I like to do that for all of my guests. So if you want to maybe send you a copy of the jacket, I can certainly have that put up on my site in the next few weeks.
Oh, yeah. No, that's no problem. I'll send that out to you right away. I'm not on my deathbed or anything here.
No, I know, but you got family. You got to spend some time with your family. And, you know, I appreciate you taking time with and sharing some very interesting stories and whatnot and some very sound business advice for the professionals out there that are tuning in as well. So, Scott, I appreciate it. You have a great great evening and a great weekend coming up and much continued success. And I hope, as I said, I'll send a little more invitation down the road as it gets closer, but I hope that you'll be able to participate next year in our Coach's Corner segment. I think you have a lot of fun doing it.
Perfect. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, Ted.
All right. Have a great night, Scott.
You as well.
All right. Thank you. Okay, for those of you that tuned in a little bit later, my special guest this evening was PGA golf guru Scott Seiferlein. Scott, as we were just talking about, is the owner of Grand Rapids Golf Lesson.com and has written four business golf and golf instruction books that we were just talking about a few minutes ago, and also noted golf instructor in Donald Trump's book, Trump, the Best Golf Advice I Ever Received. And so Scott's been sharing a little bit with us tonight about the books and some of the business applications that he's been using for him, and suggests that that we take a lead and use that in our business as well. And as I said in the beginning of the program, I've been watching and monitoring Scott a little bit for quite some time now, on the different social media sites, and always enjoy reading his inputs, and every once in a while I'll jump in there as well. But I just enjoy some of the comments and some of the posts that Scott puts up on Facebook, particularly in the various golf groups. And I know that he's very well respected among his peers, and certainly respected by this host. And I was glad to have him on. And he has a very busy schedule, and It took me a while to be able to get him to wind down enough that he'd come on and share some of the conversation tonight. So, again, Scott Seiferlein, I appreciate you coming on the program. And when I get the information from you, I will get that up on my website as well. I have another gentleman that's going to be joining us here in a little bit, but I just wanted to remind the listeners here a couple of things. Obviously, we're coming in. It's hard to believe that we're coming into the end of another month here on Golf Talk Live. We're in the end of November in another couple of weeks. November 21st, which will be next Thursday here on Golf Talk Live, I want you to tune in for my very special guest, very interesting guest, actually. I wanted to have something a little bit different on here. His name is Jim Vernes, and he is the owner of RV Golf Club. And it kind of intrigued me. Jim contacted me through, again, one of the social media sites. And I'll let Jim do more talking next week when he comes on. But basically the gist of his business is, in addition to being a golfer, Jim obviously enjoys RVing across country and whatnot, and has put together a golf club for those that also enjoy RVing. And it's very, very interesting. I think you'll find it quite intriguing. So I've invited him to come on next Thursday here on Golf Talk Live at 6 p.m. Central to join me here and talk a little bit about that. And also, for those of you that didn't get a chance to tune in live last week when I had legendary Billy Casper on the program, you really need to tune into that. You can visit the Golf Talk Live link, which is at www.blogtalkradio.com/Golf Talk Live, and if you just scroll down, I think the very first one down that you'll see it is the episode with last week with Billy Casper and, of course, Kent Nobis from Nine Iron Sports Drink. It was a great, great interview. Billy gave me really the whole gamut of the program And something I didn't get a chance, and hopefully if Scott's still tuning in. But Billy is probably one of the most humble people I've ever had the pleasure of interviewing. And just a really very, very nice man who really gives of himself. And we're going to have him on in the new year, hopefully right after the holidays for a special event. But also, I think I'm going to have him back on here in May, as you may recall, for those of you that did tune in last week. Billy hosts his annual golf tournament, a charity tournament in, I believe he said it was May, at the San Diego Golf and Country Club, which goes to help support Billy's Kids, which is his foundation, which is near and dear to his heart. So I want to have him on in May to talk about the tournament in a little more depth and a little bit more in the foundation. Maybe he'll share a few more stories. And don't forget, for those of you, I'm going to have Billy's book, linking that up on the Golf Talk Live blog website probably this weekend, The Big Three and Me, which is really an autobiography of Billy Casper's life, but just some great stories. He managed to share a few with him last week. And there's just so many in there, we couldn't get it all in. And I mean, if I joked last week on the program, if you tuned in, you know, I wish I could stretch it out for 7 hours, this program, and let Billy just have at it, because it's just a world of knowledge in the game, but just a lot of great, great stories and a lot of wisdom, and certainly was a very underrated in the media, if you will, in golf for many, many years. Won 51 tournaments, including 3 majors, 2 U.S. Opens, and a Masters tournament. And, of course, he won the Canadian Open back in, I believe it was 67, which was something that eluded Mr. Nicklaus for his career, even though he was instrumental in designing one of the courses that the Canadian Open played at for many, many years, Glen Abbey in Oakville, Ontario, which was right next to where I am from in Burlington, originally from in Burlington there. Jack never managed to get a Canadian Open under his belt, which bothered him for quite some time. He really enjoyed playing up there and put a lot of work in. And for those of you that have ever been up to the Canadian Open at when it was playing at Glen Abbey, it still periodically, I believe, does go back there every once in a while, but it's moving around more. But for many, many years, particularly in my younger years, that's where it was playing at Glen Abbey in Oakville. And I used to go there all the time, and it was a very, very well laid out course, and a lot of fun watching the different pros. And I can remember some very, very fond memories of not only Jack Nicklaus but Lee Trevino and Freddie Couples playing there, and many of the other top teacher professionals, some of whom have moved on to the Champions Tour, of course, but in more recent years. But just a great, great venue. And but Billy won that, and as I say, I believe in 1967. So for those of you, excuse me, that didn't get a chance to tune in last week, be sure that you visit the website or the Golf Talk Live link at blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive, and you can listen to that. And also go back through the on-demand section. If there's other instructors that maybe you're interested in, you could certainly go back and listen to them. All of the programs, including tonight's program, is auto-recorded, and certainly give you a chance to listen to some of the earlier broadcasts. And you can also, when you visit the main page there, there's a link up top. You can also follow the program so you get notified in your email when the shows are coming up, a reminder a little bit before the show comes on, just in case you're forgetting. And there's also a link there. You can like us right there on the show for Facebook. But also, if you are somebody that has an iTunes account, you can actually download the podcast right into iTunes and then upload it into your iPhone and whatnot. So if you're not able to, for whatever reason, scheduling conflicts, you can't listen to the live program here, you can listen to the podcast through iTunes. So make sure you do that as well. And as I was talking to Scott a little bit here, I'm just, forgive me here, I'm just passing a little bit of time here while I wait for my next guest. He's going to be calling in, Mark Nace from the Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour. He's going to be coming on here in a few moments to talk about a tournament that's coming up in December that he wants to make you all aware of. So we're going to talk about that for a few minutes.
And then he's going to be coming back on December 5th, I believe, to talk a little bit about more about the Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour. So we're just going to wait for him for a few minutes. But in the meantime, as I said to Scott, I don't have a problem in talking, so I'm going to kill a few minutes here and just sort of recap some of the things that I talked about with Scott that I'm planning on doing for next year. I'm going to be reaching out in the next week or so to many of the guests that have been on here, particularly the golf instructors and some of the mental coaches and things like that that have been on Golf Talk Live, and get them lined up for the schedule for next year to come on, many of whom, in fact, most of them, if not all of them, indicated that they wanted to participate in the Coach's Corner segment, which is going to be a lot of fun. Just to give you an idea of what it's going to be to the listeners here, what Coach's Corner, the concept is going to be a phone-in broadcast, which will be an hour long. It may go over depending on how well it does, but essentially what's going to happen is I'm going to have a couple of the coaches on here each week for an hour and give you, the listeners, a chance to call into the program, ask some questions. Also, I'm going to have a separate email account set up for questions at Golf Talk Live. I'll give that email out in the weeks to come. So if you're not able to call in, you can send in questions ahead of time. I'll be posting the schedule as far as who's going to be on and what weeks they're going to be on the program. So if you have a favorite coach that you're following, maybe you're a student of theirs and you want to come on air and ask a question, or maybe you just want to email a question ahead of time for when they do appear, I would certainly love to do that. And I'll give you that email address, as I said, in the weeks to come. I'm just in the process of finalizing a few things. But generally the program, I'm going to probably pick a different topic each week so that we're not getting too repetitive. So maybe one week we may talk on certain areas of the short game, maybe putting, and we'll get some experts on here about the putting game and allow you to ask some questions about putting and some of the techniques and some of the different styles and just how to improve your game. And it's really, we want it to be a more interactive program. We'll still be doing some guest interviews as well along the way, but I want to introduce that new segment. I think it'll be a lot of fun, and I think it'll give you, the listeners, as I said, a chance to interact with some of the teaching professionals from all over the country. And we're going to rotate the schedule out, so there'll be some new ones every week, and give a fresh perspective to the game. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I hope my guest tonight, Scott Seiferlein, will participate, as he indicated. I think he'd be a great one to have in the mix. And as I said, we'll probably just have maybe two or three at the most. We won't get too many because it'll get too confusing. But two or three of them will be on each broadcast for an hour, and we'll field some questions both on the phone and also maybe even some Twitter tweets and some emails and so forth. And also I encourage you to go on to the Facebook page at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog and throw a few likes, and you can maybe post some questions up there as well. And again, my Twitter handle is Ted and Buck CEO. Certainly love if you follow me on Twitter, and you can send some questions through Twitter as well, and I'll make sure that you I read them on the program. If you send me a tweet or if you email me some questions at a later point, I'll certainly make sure they get read on the program. Also, I would love it if you would visit the website at www.golftalkliveblog.com and check out some of the books that are on there. There's a couple of products on there as well. There's going to be more added on in the weeks to come as I get the information sent into me. But right now we've got the In-Your-Face View Base, which you remember Marion Cota was on a few months ago talking about that. And really it's a view base that you can clamp on, whether it be a desk or on your golf cart or golf bag, and it will hold your iPhone or your smartphone. It can be used for a multitude of things. As I said, when you're playing around, maybe you've got a GPS unit that you're using on your smartphone. Maybe you've got a program or an app that you're using, and you want to be able to secure your iPhone or smartphone. You can do that with the In-Your-Face View Base. So make sure you check out that on my website. There's a direct link there that you can actually go right to their secured link and and purchase the View Base, as well as the View Base for the tripod mount as well is also available through that link. For those of you that want to mount an iPhone onto your tripod, maybe you're taking some video of your golf swing and things like that. It's also available through the website as well. You can click on that link on the golftalkliveblog.com website. And also on there, you remember a few weeks back I had Joe Watson, who was from No Sweat Golf. And that was the lotion that we talked about, or the spray, if you will, which was fantastic, especially for down here in the south when you're dealing with more humid climates. That's one of the things that has really, really helped me. Spray a little bit of that on, rub it, you know, literally around all of your hands and your fingers, and it really helps prevent your hands from sweating. And you can actually even do that before you put your glove on. That'll help inside your hand from sweating into your glove and making a real mess there. So definitely want to check that out. It's available on the website as well. It'll take you to, again, to Joe's site there, and you can make a purchase right through the link off of my website. I'm going to be adding some other products on there as well. The Star Putter Putting Tool link is going to also be available on the website. You heard the short commercial earlier on during Scott's segment about the Star Putter Putting Tool. It's available at starputter.com, but it will also be available through my website as well at golftalkliveblog.com. And got a lot of great guests going to be coming up in the new year. One I'm really looking forward to, it was actually in Billy's book. There was a short paragraph in there about the late Teddy Rhodes, who was an African-American golfer who went through a very early, early time in the PGA history. He has a foundation that is run by his daughter, Peggy Rhodes. She's going to be coming on the show in February. In fact, I think we've just confirmed the date, February 20th, and she's going to be talking about the Teddy Rhodes Foundation and talking a little bit about some of the struggles that her father faced earlier on the PGA Tour, trying to get out there and play, and just some of the things that he had to overcome. And we'll also talk about some of the other African-American golfers who struggled earlier on, such as Lee Elder and Charlie Sifford, of course. We'll talk a little bit about them. And also joining her on the 20th is going to be Pete McDaniels, who was the author of Uneven Lies, which was, again, a book that talked talked greatly about some of the struggles that many of the African-American players had very early on. And the reason why I wanted to do this story, I think it's a great story to be told. I know that I believe the Golf Channel did a few years ago, did a little bit about it, but I wanted to get Peggy on the program, particularly to talk about that, about her father, and again, some of the things that he was faced with, but also to help her foundation, and she has a tournament that they do every year. I believe it's in Nashville, and I believe it's in the fall, in around September, but we'll get the dates and everything for you when she comes on here, get a little more clarity for it. But I really want to bring that, because really, you know, when we put things in perspective, if it wasn't for some of the struggles that Teddy Rhodes and some of the others that that I mentioned, players like Tiger Woods might not be playing on the PGA Tour today. So there were a lot of crossroads that had to be made, and I think it's a story that needs to be told, and I'm very honored that Peggy and Pete McDaniels is going to come on and talk about that and his book, Uneven Lies. That'll be on February 20th here on Golf Talk Live at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Just waiting a few more minutes here, if you can just bear with me. My last guest will be on here just in a few more minutes, Mark Nace of the Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour. He's going to be coming on talking about a tournament that's going to be coming up in this coming December. So we're going to let him talk a little bit about that and explain what's happening there and some of the good things that they're doing with that tournament. And then, as I said, he's going to be coming back here on December 5th, I believe. He's going to be coming back and talking a little bit more about the tour and some of the things that he's doing for next year in 2014. I want to thank again, while I've got a few moments here, my very special guest this evening. I really appreciate Cipherline for coming on here and just sharing some of his insight and some of his experiences here. I know, as I mentioned several times throughout the program, that Scott was a little bit under the weather. Unfortunately, he's up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they're experiencing a little colder weather than we are here down in Panama City Beach, Florida. And So I know that even though I know he said they're joking at the end, he's not in his deathbed, but I know what it's like to, being from Canada, I know what it's like to get a cold this time of the year. But anyways, Scott, I want to thank you for coming on the program, and I appreciate it. And for those of you that weren't able to tune into the live broadcast, immediately following the broadcast here tonight, if you give it about maybe 15, 20 minutes, the recorded version will load up on the Golf Talk Live site, and you'll be able to listen to the broadcast tonight in its entirety. And I really strongly suggest, particularly not just the average golfers out there that want to maybe pick up a tip or two on how to you know, get better prepared, but particularly for some of the golf instructors out there, Scott has a wealth of knowledge that he's accumulated over the years, as he said, and he graciously came on and shared some of it. And of course, I want you to make sure that you visit his website, GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com, and purchase a copy of any of his books. He's got four books available, The Game of Golf and The Art of Business, 19 Holes of Business Golf Conversation, and of course the two books, Stop Slicing in Five Swings, and Stop Slicing in Five Swings for Left-Handed Golfers. So you can get the link to purchase those is www.GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com/books, and you can get yourselves a copy there. And again, you know, I thoroughly enjoy having a lot of the instructors that I have on the program each week, and I also enjoy a lot of the other business types in the golf industry that are coming on, and we're going to get into more of that as well. One other thing I do want to mention, now that I did briefly bring it in, and I haven't got all the details for this quite yet, but another program, we're actually going to be putting it on an entirely different evening for this program, but something that is really near and dear to me, and I guess I get this from my upbringing. I have a great mother who has always been very supportive of me over the years. Of course, my father has as well, but my mother particularly is always, as I'm sure many out there can say, attest to. You know, she always taught me that, you know, how important the role in life that women play, and I think it's very underrated and has been for many, many years in all aspects, and particularly in the golf industry. You know, a lot of people might argue and say, well, you know, they've got the LPGA Tour, and I don't understand what you're talking about. But when you talk to a lot of the women out there, they're still faced with many, many struggles in the golf business. And as a result of that, I've decided to, since this particular program has been so successful this year, I just feel that it prudent of me to expand it. And I can't think of a better direction to go than to bring on a whole new segment, or actually a whole new program called The Women of Golf. And as I mentioned to Scott, Cindy Miller, LPGA player, Cindy Miller is going to be joining me on that program, doing some interviews and joining in some of the conversation and interviewing different, not only players, but also some great female golf coaches, and teachers. I'm sure that we'll get some great ones like Nicole Weller to come back on the program, and particularly on that segment, I'm sure she'll come back, and some of the others that have been on the program thus far on my regular Golf Talk Live program. But this is going to be a special program that's going to be really geared to the women of golf, not just to the instructors, as I said, but to the players, but also to many of the golf professionals out there in other areas of golf. For instance, some of the business professionals that run successful golf businesses, some of the women in that area as well, from clothing lines to instructors to various different products out there. We want to hear some of their success stories and some of the challenges that they're faced in. And we want to hear from you, some of the ladies out there, some of the things that you're dealing with and you're struggling with, not just in your game. Maybe you're having difficulty getting on certain courses and things like that, and we want to talk about that and in the Women of Golf. So Cindy Miller, as I said, is going to be coming on that with me and getting involved in different areas. I don't know whether or not we haven't finalized everything, whether she'll be on every program or not, but she's certainly going to have some great input, and I'm looking forward to that. And she's going to be inviting some of her great friends off the LPGA Tour as well, both past and some present, going to be coming in. So I'm really looking forward to working with Cindy Miller. She's a phenomenal, has been a phenomenal player, but equally phenomenal, a fantastic instructor. And I'm also going to have her as a guest on the program as well here on Golf Talk Live in the new year. So I want to definitely look forward to doing that. And I believe that my my guest is ready to go here. So let me just introduce Mark Mays from the Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour.
Hey, Ted.
Good evening. I'm doing very well, Mark. Welcome to Golf Talk Live.
Thank you for having me on.
I appreciate it. Mark, I just, you know, as I said to you earlier, later this afternoon, actually, I wanted to give you an opportunity to come on and talk a little bit. I've been telling the listeners here while I was waiting for you to call in a little bit about why you were coming on this evening. And, of course, I'm going to have you back in December, but for a little bit longer segment. But tonight I just wanted to – you have a tournament that's going to be coming up. So first off, just explain a little bit very briefly what the Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour is and what it is that you've got coming up in December.
Okay. Well, we have six events. The Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour is a tour of six events. Five are played during the summer months, and one is played during the Christmas holiday break. And we're coming up to that one now, and it's called the Hardy's Collegiate. It's played December 27th through the 30th at Perdido Bay Golf Course in Pensacola, Florida. I have players. I just got off the phone with a player from Michigan State University who just signed up. I'll have players probably from 30 different states, maybe from 45 to 50 different colleges, and I'll have two or three players from most schools will come in and attend this event.
Perfect. Now, you mentioned Hardy's involvement. Can you explain a little bit about what Hardy's is doing?
Well, Hardy's, I can't express enough gratitude to Hardy's. As you well know, and I'm sure the listeners know, you cannot put on a good collegiate event, a good professional event without sponsors. And Hardy's
right.
has stepped up to the plate in a major way for us here at the Hardy's Collegiate. And they allow us to put on a tournament that makes it affordable for the college player. We include, because of Hardy's involvement, we include three nights lodging. We play four rounds of golf. You get a dozen golf balls. You get a golf shirt. You get all meals, three meals a day, and all of this for $390. So
wow.
we do this. Hardy's does this so that we can put an affordable number out there to allow all collegiate players with the opportunity to come and play in a collegiate event that's set up as a PGA Tour event would be. You're going to have
right.
all the signage that you would normally have at a PGA Tour event. You will have your own personalized hitting station on the driving range there. We actually treat the players as people, not numbers. So when they come to our events and participate on our tour, it's a relaxed atmosphere under a heavy competition format. And we're just proud of the players that we have had in the past. We have nine players that are now on some sort of either the web.com tour, the Hooters tour, or other mini tours. But we've had some great players come through the Hardy's Collegiate, and we're looking forward to another stellar field here coming up in about 6 weeks.
So it's obviously, it sounds to me like it's a great stepping stone for a lot of these young players to get out there and get some competition and some tournament experience as they make their journey in their golf careers. Gives them an opportunity to you know, play against their fellow competitors, some of which they may even be competing with at the collegiate level within the school system and themselves, but gives them an opportunity to say to advance on to the next level, whether it be, as you said, the web.com or Hooters Tour. Gives them an opportunity to hone their skills, if you will, playing in your events. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the whole reason we have expanded to the TPC series, where we're now participating at TPC Louisiana and TPC Deer Run and TPC Sawgrass. And we're going to set the courses up the same as it would be for the professional tournament that is being held there. So the players can evaluate themselves to see if I'm a sophomore in college and I'm shooting even par after 36 holes, I might have a chance at making a PGA Tour event. I'm holding my own on the course that they're going to be playing. So it gives them the opportunity to evaluate their own golf game.
Now, how long have you been doing this, Mark?
This is our fourth year now, Ted. I'm originally was born and raised in the Panhandle here, but I've lived the last 35 years in St. Louis, Missouri, and for 10 of those years I was a tournament director on the Nike Tour back when the PGA Tour first bought out the Hogan Tour and took it over and expanded that to a 30-tour format. I stepped up and became one of their tournament directors for the next 10 years, participating in St. Louis, Missouri, and Denver, Colorado on the Nike Tour.
Fantastic. Well, it's certainly, Mark, it's certainly a great business model that you have, and I think it's fantastic what you're doing to help a lot of these young golfers, as I say, get a chance to get out there and get some tournament experience, and I'll be more than happy to do whatever I can with the program and even outside of the program to help promote it, to get it to more, you know, maybe some additional sponsoring and things like that, you know, for the new year. So I'll certainly be more than happy to help you do that. And when you come back on the show December 5th, we'll get into a little bit more detail as to how people can help and so forth. Obviously, I don't know what you've got available for December, but since we're kind of under the gun here with that tournament, it's probably a little too late for some of them to get too involved. But as far as sponsoring and that, but certainly we can start working on for 2014. But what a fantastic thing! I'm glad that you're doing this, and my good friend Jonathan Laird at South Coast Golf Guide, who's a big sponsor of the program here, Golf Talk Live. Actually connected us just recently, and I'm glad that he did. I always want to help the local golfing community here in the Panhandle, so I'm glad that we were able to connect, Mark, and I appreciate you coming on the program.
Well, Ted, I appreciate that too, and I appreciate you saying something about Jonathan Laird there at South Coast Golf Guide, because Jonathan really is a godsend for a bunch of us here in the Panhandle and the Gulf Coast area with the news that he puts out in his guide, giving us directions to all the courses and the rates and so forth, but he has seen my Hardy's tournament, he has seen my tour, and that's why I can't wait to discuss with you further as we get in. I can talk about how the juniors participate in the tournament,
sure,
how the scholarship dollars are won in the tournaments, and so forth. It's just a wonderful thing we're doing here on our tour, and I look forward to explaining more to your audience about our tournament format.
Well, I appreciate it, Mark, for you taking the time to come on this evening. And as I said, Will, you know, as I mentioned to you off air a little earlier this afternoon, if you send me the information to my email for the tournament in December, I'll make sure that I give it a good plug again next week, just to remind everybody in the next few weeks leading up to the tournament until you come back on, and then we can get into it a little bit further. Then we'll talk a little bit more about the Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour in more detail and how people can get involved. But Mark, I appreciate you coming on this evening and taking some time away from your schedule, and as I said, we'll do what we can to help promote not only this tournament coming up in December, the 27th till when, 30th?
27th to 30th. It's called the Hardy's Collegiate.
Perfect. And that's going to be at Perdido?
Perdido Bay Golf Course in Pensacola, Florida. And, you know, any college player that's looking for a good holiday tournament, they want to, you know, get out of the snow conditions up north, this is a great venue for that. And anybody that just wants to play in some great competitions, we will flat be putting it on there on the 27th through the 30th.
Perfect. Mark, you have a great evening, and I'll let you go here in a minute and get back, enjoy the rest of your evening. But I want to thank you for coming on Golf Talk Live tonight and just talk a little bit about the tournament. And as I said, we'll plug it in the weeks leading up until you come back again, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the tour when you come back on the 5th. So I will communicate with you over the next few days and secure that and finalize it. And as I said, if you can just send me a little bit more detail for the tournament coming up in December, I'll make sure that I plug it in the next few shows.
Ted, I appreciate that, and I look forward to coming back on and talking with you some more.
All right, not a problem. Mark, you have a great evening, and thanks for coming on Golf Talk Live.
Thank you, Ted. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, it's a great tournament there coming up December 27th to the 30th, put on by the Southeastern collegiate golf tour, and my new golf friend, Mark Nace, who is the executive director, is putting that on, and I'm certainly going to do, as I said, whatever I can to help promote that. And I want to give a special thank you again to Jonathan Laird of South Coast Golf Guide, who has been a big supporter of the program since we've started this. And I really appreciate it, Jonathan. He's been a great sponsor of the program, has helped spread the word, and I hope I know he will continue to do so. And I'm looking forward to continuing a working relationship with Jonathan and his great guide. And if you are looking for a copy, you can pretty much visit just about any golf course or many of the golf courses here in the Southeast, from way over in Mississippi right out through here into the Panhandle. You can get a copy, and I believe Edwin Watts golf stores are carrying them as well in certain areas, as well as some of down here in the Panama City Beach area, and I think even out in Pensacola, some of the bigger condos and that might carry them as well. But if not, you can go on to southcoastgolfguide.com website, or you can also go on to the on Facebook and check out the Facebook page under South Coast Golf Guide. And it truly is a very, very professionally run and very, Jonathan and Mark had indicated, does a fantastic job of promoting golf here in the Southeast. He's been doing this for, I believe, he's in his 20th plus year of doing this and providing this guide to the areas and communities out here in the southeastern part of the United States. It's just a very, very well put together publication filled with a lot of great courses. And to you northerners up there that are tuning in and wanting to get out of the cold weather, I suggest that you get on southcoastgolfguide.com and check out Jonathan's and get yourself a website and get yourself a copy sent up there and start looking through some of the great courses that you can play here down in the South. There's just too many to list. Some great ones here in the Panama City Beach area. The Ombre Golf Course, as some of you may be familiar that have been down to this area, is a great facility. Up until this year, they've hosted the Stage 2 qualifying on the PGA Tour at that. In fact, Mike Weir, who many of you Canadians might recognize, top player, won the Masters a few years back, played actually came down to the Ombre and qualified on that course. They didn't have it this year. Unfortunately, they had to relocate it. I think it went out somewhere on the East Coast. I'm not 100% sure on that, but they had to cancel it this year at the Ombre just because we had so much gosh darn rain this year that they had to make some adjustments to the course, and they just weren't going to be able to get it in top form for that. But I'm sure it's going to be coming back. But that's been there for many, many years. And Ombre is a fantastic course. They got a nice range to work on, and it's got, I believe, 27 holes, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, and I've played all three nines there. So for those of you that want to come down and play some great golf, but there's a lot of great courses in the Panhandle area, in the northeastern part of Florida, out to Mississippi. There's some great golf courses, and right through Alabama, of course, the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. There are, I believe, 10 or 11 courses in that. I've played a few of those, including the Highlands here in the great state of Alabama, in Dothan, Alabama, which is where I frequent quite often and enjoy playing there. So a lot of great courses. Many of which are going to be in Jonathan's golf guide, the South Coast Golf Guide, so make sure you pick up a copy. And thank you again, Jonathan. I know you're tuning into the program. Thank you for your continued support of Golf Talk Live. Well, folks, another great evening. I enjoyed my guest this evening, Mr. Scott Seiferlein, PGA golf guru and owner of the Grand Rapids Golf Lesson.com and author of many, many books and both golf and golf instruction business as well. Definitely want to get yourself a copy of those. So check out his website at www.grandrapidsgolflesson.com/books. You can get a copy of the books, any one of his four books there, or you can just go to grandrapidsgolflesson.com and just check out his site in general. And you can also contact Scott through his website as well if you're interested in him helping you with your game. And I strongly suggest for those of you up there that want to work on your game that you get in touch with Scott. He's a fantastic guy, and I certainly enjoyed having him on the program. And again, a special thank you as well to Mark Nace for coming on, the executive director of the Southeastern Collegiate Golf Tour. Thank you for coming on the program and sharing the upcoming event in December. And again, he will be coming back on December 5th. Thank you very much for tuning into Golf Talk Live. Don't forget, each and every week we are here at blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. And for those of you that, for whatever reason, were busy or just didn't have the time to tune into the live broadcast tonight, give it a few moments and you can tune in to the recorded version here shortly. Thank you again to my guests this evening, and I look forward to seeing you back here next week, next Thursday, November 21st, where my special guest will be Mr. Jim Vernes of RV Golf Club, and may have some other surprises for you next week as well. Don't forget to visit the website, www.golftalkliveblog.com, and check out some of the great books that are up there and some of the products that are on there as well. You may want to purchase some of the books or products for that special golfer in your family for Christmas. Remember that you can also, during the live broadcast, that you can call into the program if you so choose at area code 646-716-4667. Or you can email me if you've got some questions or comments, or if you're interested in coming on the program, if you're a teaching professional and you were tuning in maybe for the first time and you think you have something that you want to share with my listeners, you're welcome to do so and give me send me an email and let me know at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. That's ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And also would love it if you would follow Golf Talk Live on Facebook at facebook.com/golftalkliveblog. And as I said, I also am on Twitter. For those of you that want to follow me on Twitter or send a few tweets here and there, you can do so. My Twitter handle is Ted and Buck CEO. That's Ted and Buck CEO. Appreciate it, guys, for tuning in again. Have a great evening. Have a great weekend. And I will see you next week here on Golf Talk Live. Thank you and God bless.